Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
A good Saturday morning to you, Chicago, and welcome to Inside the Clubhouse, where every Saturday, 52 weeks a year, we talk baseball here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I am David Haw, joined by Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock this morning, and we do have something to talk about today. Bruce, we have one of the most dominant pitchers to ever wear a Cubs uniform is back in Chicago, and my guess is Jake Arrieta is here to do more than take a bow. Good morning, Bruce. How are you? What was your reaction to the big move yesterday?
Good morning, David, and good morning to our great listeners on Chicago's top sports station, WSCR Radio, 670thescore.com. And as David said, we're here for you every week, 52 weeks out of the year, 9 to 11, talking baseball. And David, I was not shocked. We've talked about it for a long time now that the Cubs and Arrieta had been talking deal. Arrieta coming off of 3 years with Philadelphia, not the greatest 3 years of his career, but back deemed healthy by scouts who have looked at him and reported back to the Cubs that he's ready to go. And the rest was just about getting the price right. Initially, Scott Boras, the agent for Jake Arrieta and Arrieta, were asking for a couple-year deal, $10 million a year. That has been whittled down to somewhere between $6 and $7 million with an option for following year coming up. We hope to hear all that news coming up here today or tomorrow when the Chicago Cubs officially announce Jake Arrieta after vetting him and making sure that the medicals are okay. But this is, a reminder of the days of old. He's a 35-year-old pitcher, doesn't quite pitch the way he did, yet this is and it appears to be a solid move for the rotation.
It's a big move, and we will be talking about what it means here from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And you can let us know what you think. 312-644-6767. Call us or text us. The Tech Zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin, and online at rosenhyundai.com. And we are going to talk, Bruce, at 9:30 to Megan Montemuro, the new Trib beat writer covering the Cubs. That's a good time to talk to Megan because she covered him for three of the last three seasons when he was in Philadelphia as the Phillies beat writer. And at 10 o'clock, we will talk to Jerry Nairn, the latest addition to the coaching staff for Tony La Russa on the bench for the White Sox. But let's start with Arrieta. It is the biggest story in town. And, Bruce, you're right. 1 year, $6 million. You did talk about this a couple weeks ago. This is something you probably weren't as surprised as maybe some people. It's popular. Is it practical? How much will it change your perception and expectations for this Cubs pitching staff?
Well, you know, it all remains on the good health of Jake Arrieta, who has not been healthy over the last couple of years and doesn't quite have the fastball or the breaking slider like he had when he had his magic in 2015 and 2016 when he won 20 games in a row without losing a ball game during the end of 2015 into 2016, which is still a Chicago Cub record. But that and being a big game pitcher, I mean, if you look at his postseasons, he has more postseason wins than any pitcher in Cub history with five. That's not a huge number, but it does indicate dominance for a short period of time in postseason. This is a guy that really was the talk of baseball in 2015 into 16 as being the most unhittable pitcher in the game. That said, David, this is a different Jake Arrieta, a guy that has to fool people a little bit, doesn't have the dominant pitches he once had.
He is the last Cub pitcher to win a playoff game. And that's remarkable, and it tells you where the organization is and why they're in the midst of kind of retooling, if you will, their pitching staff, because they haven't won a postseason game since he did it in 2017 in the NLCS against the Dodgers. And so you wonder if he will be the next one, or if they are that far away from the playoffs, because Bruce, you're right, he is a big game pitcher. He is, that is what he was in Chicago as much as anything. 2015 was magical, dominant, and historic. All those things are true. Does it matter if you have a big game pitcher if you're not a team that's capable of getting in any big games? I mean, that is the one question you have, because I don't know what where he fits necessarily on this pitching rotation. It does help. It does give you a little bit more hope. He isn't the same guy. You know, he won 22 games in 2015. He won 22 games in three seasons in Philadelphia. So he has struggled there after all the consternation of whether or not the Cubs would choose Jake or Yu Darvish. Remember that debate back in the winter, I believe, of 2018. So that is something we look at, and you know you're getting a different pitcher. He's coming off 4-4 record with a 5.08 ERA. And yet, Bruce, he does give you a different look when you look at what we talked about before. Kyle Hendricks, Zach Davies, Alec Mills. You needed somebody that was a different style, a different type of pitcher. And Jake Arrieta, at least you know he will be that.
Well, he's the hardest thrower, according to the scouts that looked at him. He's throwing 92, 93. He's already the hardest thrower on a staff that includes Hendricks, Davies, Mills, Alzolay probably throws harder at 90, 94 to 97. Trevor Williams coming over from Pittsburgh, and Shelby Miller, you know, agreed to a minor league contract. There's hopes that he can regain some of his stuff from his career. But it's still a contact pitching staff, Arrieta or no Arrieta. And defense, which was key for the Cubs last year because they were the top defensive team in the National League last year, is going to be a big part of what the success of these pitchers have, because you don't have the dominant strikeout pitcher. You don't have a left-handed starting pitcher to go up against the tough lefties. So this is it's going to be a little bit different than what you've been looking at for Chicago Cub pitching staffs over the last 6 or 7 years.
And Bruce, you have to wonder, he turns 35 next month. And at this point in his career, the durability issues that you didn't necessarily worry about before are things that are a real part of the concern level when you talk about Jake Arrieta, the availability of him every fifth day. Now, you know, injuries got in the way last year. It's a truncated 60-game season. There are a lot of reasons for perhaps that happening. But you look at his innings count, and, you know, he pitched 172 his first year with the Phillies, certainly, made 24 starts the next year. I think injuries are going to be an issue for any 35-year-old pitcher. You just wonder then, knowing that and tempering maybe those expectations, this is a great nostalgic tour this morning and last night, and you see Jake Arrieta, and you see the video and the footage of all the celebrations, a couple no-hitters, the World Series, the 2015, but that's not that guy. Is he your third starter? Is he your fourth starter? Is he your fifth starter? Does it matter?
Well, David, I'll take it another step. He could be your sixth and seventh starter, because what did we hear from Jed Hoyer, the president of baseball operations, just a couple weeks ago? And that is, we expect that we're going to need 7 or 8 starting pitchers. Now, normally when you hear a general manager or a top baseball official say that, David, they're talking about during a whole season. But coming off of the truncated 2020 season with only 12 to 13 starts on average for a starting pitcher, they're talking about slow rolling the starting pitchers back into being able to pitch 150, 175 innings. 200, you know, pretty much forget about it. There's hardly anybody that's going to be doing that any longer. That's just not the way the game is played. But getting into the 160, 170 innings, this year is going to be totally different. So a lot of teams are looking at 6, 7 starters that they'll be counting on. And if you look at the way the Dodgers won over the last 3 or 4 years, they had guys like Rich Hill that only made 20 starts and supplemented, you know, gave an extra day here and there during the season for the rotation, just giving them these 6 starters. So in essence, I think they're going to need all of these guys. They're going to need Hendricks. They're going to need Davies. They're going to need Arrieta, Mills, Alzolay, Williams, Miller, you know, and then maybe down the road, you know, you're going to get with some of your younger pitchers, and maybe Marquez is going to be ready. So this is a different type of year we're looking at, and I don't think you have to count on Jake Arrieta to make 30 starts to be somebody that can be a positive influence and pitch good games for the Cubs.
Bruce, the story of this offseason hasn't been what the Cubs have done. It's been more than what the Cubs haven't done. It's been the money they have saved and not spent. Then here in the past couple weeks, actually the last 10 days or so, they go out and they spend $7 million on Jock Peterson. And then here is Jake Arrieta popping up on the Wrigley Field doorstep because he's going to cost you $6 million for one season of maybe. And I do wonder if anything has changed. We talked to Crane Kenny Friday morning on the Mully and Haw show. We talked to Crane about what this offseason has been, the difference between what was expected and what really happened. And so we know finances have played a major role in every decision that the Cubs have made this offseason. Has something changed? Did something go? Was something different about the last 10 days when the Cubs decided, okay, we need to at least go out and supplement this roster to give us a better chance to compete?
Well, David Hall wrote on 670thescore.com that if the Cubs need to spend more money to be credible in 2021, I think that had an awful lot to do with it, don't you?
I don't know about that, Bruce. I don't know.
I mean, the timing was pretty right on, wasn't it? I mean, obviously, I'm jesting, but in reality, you know, that column that you wrote for our website was pretty much right on time with them making these additions, us hearing through our friend David Kaplan originally that the Cubs were going to get more money from the business office. And sure enough, we've seen all these moves here where they're spending $6 million here on Arrieta. They spent $7 million on Jock Peterson. They're going to have a couple more moves over this next week. You're going to see them bringing in another bullpen guy. I think you're going to see them bringing in a left-handed hitting infielder that can play second base. You know, there's a couple guys out there. You know, guys like Dietrich, guys like Sogard, guys who am I thinking of with Pittsburgh? That was their second baseman for a number of years. There's a bunch of different guys out there that hit left-handed that I think they'll be moving in to kind of solidify that position, maybe with a left-handed hitter as well. So they're not done spending money, and I think that this will be a much more credible team in coming out of 2021 in spring training than people imagined even 10 days ago, as you put it.
Well, I've got to ask you this, and the listeners can weigh in too. 312-644-6767. Our listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Bruce, if you're looking at a $13 million pile of money, and this is 10 days ago, and you are Jed Hoyer, and you know that in that $13 million pile of money, you can divide a couple of different ways. And let's just take it back to the beginning of December. You can use that $13 million to afford Kyle Schwarber and John Lester and bring those two Cub legends, if you will, back to the fold to make another run at it in 2021. Because Kyle Schwarber, I think, signed for $10 million, and John Lester signed for three with the same team, the Nationals. So that $13 million committed to them, or you can pivot and spend $7 on Jock Peterson and $6 on Jake Arrieta, and you take the same sort of nostalgic approach to Arrieta, but you spend that $13 million on those two players versus the two that you let get out of town. Which is a better use of the money if you are Jed Hoyer?
Gee, that's a fabulous question. I think I'll dodge it by saying it's a wash. I mean, I really think, but honestly, I think the Cubs come out of it fine because Peterson is a more versatile player than Schwarber. Schwarber might have more power, although, you know, the power hitting numbers for Peterson have been very good up until last year when he was not playing quite as much. But from a point of view of defense all the way around, and Lester versus Arrieta right now, you know, I don't think there's a lot of difference other than maybe more flexibility with Peterson than with Schwarber. Now, Schwarber may come back and have another 35 home run season like he did in 2019 and be everything that Washington wanted for the middle of their order. That might be the case. But Peterson is looks like a good pick for the Cubs. So I would have to say they've done okay for spending that amount of money. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that it's interesting because there's not a huge difference between Jock Peterson and Kyle Schwarber. You upgrade defensively, but is he going to be as in Peterson, I think. But is Schwarber going to hit more home runs than Peterson if you give them both 500 at-bats? You can make that argument. You wonder. And as far as the difference between Arrieta and Lester, I don't know that. I don't know what to expect in the 2021 version of each pitcher. Both guys, you could make the argument, we could sit here all morning debating on which one is more popular in Cubs history among Cub fans, because it's like choosing your favorite child. It's hard to do for Cub fans who remember what both guys meant to kind of the golden age of Cub baseball. I don't know that you can pick one over the other. Without Jake Arrieta, 2016 doesn't happen, because 2015 doesn't happen. And without John Lester, you know, none of it is possible either. So both guys have their respective place and have carved their respective niche in Cubs history. So I do think there's an element of, well, to say, well, it's a wash, it's a good debate. And yet I think the significant part of that conversation, Bruce, is the fact that the Cubs did pivot and they went away from this idea that they weren't going to spend the money. And they have been more aggressive, if you will, the last 10 days or so for whatever reason, And I don't think that it was public pressure, but I don't know that to be true either. So I think that they are just now better off than they were before they signed Peterson, before they signed Arrieta. And I hope that you're right, that they aren't done, because they still have some holes to fill, because I think the most magical words of every baseball fan's winter are pitchers and catchers report this week. So that is going to be fun, and they are going to continue to build this roster.
Now, if I'm a Cardinal fan or I'm a pundit who just cracks wise all the time, I would say, well, their next signing might be Fergie Jenkins. So, but well, luckily, I don't fall into that area, and I'm not that kind of a guy. But they are going a little bit long a tooth when you're talking about comparisons between Arrieta and Lester, and trying to really compare them to who they were back in the heyday for the Cubs back in 15, 16, and 17. They're not the same pitchers. So we're talking about fourth and fifth starters now rather than ones or twos. There is a big difference right there, David. By the way, the other name I was thinking of is Neil Walker. So
right.
Walker, yeah. Sogard, Dietrich, those are the left-handed hitting second baseman type that the Cubs likely to look at here adding over the next couple weeks.
And I like our guy, Peoria Matt, the texter of the year of every year. He texts in from 309. Will John Lackey get a 1 or 2 year deal, Bruce?
I know. Well, you know, you have to look, if you're looking at this realistically, you have to differentiate between the Arriettas and the Lesters of 15, 16, and 17, and then 4 years later. I mean, it's just, you know, there's attrition. That doesn't mean both of them can't have really good years, win 12 to 15 games in, you know, ideal situations, throw, you know, six good innings, you know, 20 times during the season. But we're not talking about dominant pitchers any longer. We're talking about fours and fives.
He's Bruce Levine. I'm David Haugh. We are here inside the clubhouse every Saturday, 52 weeks a year, talking baseball, 9 to 11 on the score. We've got a big show continuing to talk about the Jake Arrieta signing by the Chicago Cubs. There's been other moves this week to talk about throughout baseball at 9:30. When we come back, we will talk to the new Chicago Tribune beat writer for the Chicago Cubs, Megan Montemuro, and at 10 o'clock, Jerry Nairn, the new bench coach, or the new coach addition to the Tony La Russa staff for the White Sox. Plenty of more conversation along the way. Your calls, 312-644-6767. Your texts as well. You contribute as much to this show as we do. We are on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
And the pitch. Swing and a miss, a no-hitter. Jake Arrieta has just pitched a no-hitter at Dodger Stadium. A curveball got Utley swinging, and Arrieta being mobbed by his teammates. Cubs win 2-0.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. That was the magical voice of Pat Hughes from a Jake Arrieta no-hitter, and also reminds us of the good news we announced yesterday. The Score and Intercom and the Chicago Cubs agreed to a multi-year extension on the contract to broadcast Cubs games here on the Score, so that'll be happening for another few years. And as we learned last night, yesterday afternoon, Jake Arrieta will be here next year at least, a one-year, $6 million deal signed to return to the Cubs for 2021. And Bruce, as we talk about Arrieta, it kind of got in the way of the other conversation that was very topical this week when you talk about the Cubs. Chris Bryant back in the news, SNY report out in New York about the Mets rekindling those trade conversations. Anything to that? What was your first reaction about the possibility that the Cubs and Mets might be engaged in trade talks?
Well, I think it's possible. You know, the Mets want to add on. They want some more hitting, and certainly Chris Bryant is somebody that you kind of have to throw out the 2020 season because of injury, multiple injuries, probably three injuries that really impacted his entire season last year. And look at the totality of who he is, and at age 29, that he's just beginning to go to his main years of being at a peak of talent. Baseball years 28 through 32, normally the top years for baseball position players. So from all that, yeah, it would be interesting. I don't know if it has any legs right now. The $19 million of the contract is certainly a situation that comes up, but the Mets have shown interest of ignoring money in certain situations here recently, and now having missed out on adding another great pitcher in Bauer, they might just load up on more offense to try to already enhance what they already have, which is a pretty good-looking team going forward.
I'm sure we'll continue to talk about the possibilities of Chris Bryant being rumored to be traded to the Mets or anywhere else, for that matter, during spring training. But right now, let's go out to the Score hotline presented by Alpamonte Ford. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park on North Avenue or apford.com.
A wonderful friend and a great baseball writer comes back to Chicago and is now the beat reporter for the Chicago Cubs for your Chicago Tribune. Our friend Megan Montemuro joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning, Megan. How are you today?
Good morning, Megan.
Hey, good morning. I'm good. Trying to stay warm and out of the cold weather.
Welcome back to Chicago, Megan. It's good to have you back, and I hope that your experience at the Chicago Tribune is as rewarding as mine was. It's a great place to work, and I wish you all the best of luck in returning here. I know you're from the area. I worked here before. But what a time to have you on this morning, because the last three seasons while Jake Arrieta was in a Phillies uniform, you were covering the Phillies. So you know as well as anybody in town what to expect of what happened in Philadelphia. So let's start there. What happened in Philadelphia?
Well, I would say part of it was, you know, injuries certainly kind of affected him. He dealt with an injury each of his three seasons that ultimately would end those years prematurely. So, you know, I think that was a question when he left Philadelphia. What was his durability going to be as he aged? And certainly that was an issue at times, most significantly dealing with bone spurs during the 2019 season. But I do think one thing, and I have to imagine this is what appealed to the Cubs, was, you know, this is a guy that can still give you 5 to 6 innings pretty consistently. He averaged 5.5 innings per start during his Phillies career. And in a shortened season like this, where teams across the board are going to need 7 to 8 starters to get through, you know, a season after, you know, only playing 60 last year, that is going to be valuable for teams. And so the biggest question, I think, for me is what is the consistency of those? Are there more good starts than bad? And, you know, I think that's really going to dictate kind of what this reunion with the Cubs is going to look like.
Megan, covering Jake, you know, even when he had a mediocre or rarity poor start, he was one of these pitchers, and I think you and I texted about this, that never accepted the fact that he wasn't at his best, that it wasn't, there was some other things in the way that impacted that particular start. Did he still have that same mindset with Philadelphia where, regardless of the results or what the start was like, that he refused to allow that to get into his head as having had a poor start?
I do think there were a couple times where he acknowledged, you know, something wasn't working that day, and, you know, he put the team in a bad spot by not being able to be effective. But I do think he still carried that mentality that, you know, he was going out there and giving what he had, especially in those starts over the 3 years where he was pitching through some sort of injury or ailment. And so, yeah, I mean, it certainly, there were times where, you know, maybe he would point to other things for what went wrong in a start for him. But I do think there were, just thinking back, a couple moments from some of his starts where, you know, either he wasn't executing the pitch sequencing or locating as well. And I think it'll be interesting going forward, too, you know, as he continues, you know, he's going to be 35 early next month, what his stuff looks like, because, you know, his strikeout rate really took another kind of decrease over the last 3 years.
Talking with Megan Montemuro here on Inside the Clubhouse on The Score, and Megan covered the Phillies the last three seasons for The Athletic, comes to town to cover the Cubs for the Chicago Tribune. And Megan, anyone that remembers Jake Arrieta in Chicago, beyond the tremendous performances on the mound, there was a lot of, he was a bigger than life personality. He was a guy that has a following all its own, and that's why fans were reacting so, I think, gleefully last night to many of them that I know, Cubs fans reaching out like, oh my gosh, Jake is back. That personality, how did it play in Philadelphia? That's a tough town too. That's a town that is, a you know, very into its sports, much like Chicago, very similar. How did Jake Arrieta's personality fit in not only to the Phillies clubhouse, but the Philadelphia sports scene?
Well, I would definitely say his signing there kind of kickstarted, you know, their jump from being a rebuilding team to trying to build a contender. I mean, they signed him the year before, pursuing Harper and acquiring JT Realmuto. Like, he was the first big move they really made coming out of that rebuild. So I think initially, certainly fans were excited. Some were definitely a little nervous because, you know, when you have a good pitcher who has done a lot for an organization and the team that, you know, they're leaving doesn't seem to really be engaging and bringing them back, you know, sometimes that can be a red flag. So I think over the course of those 3 years, though, there were certainly some frustrations among fans that, you know, felt like he wasn't living up to that, you know, $375 million deal, and the expectations that come with that, despite, I think, the Phillies organization knowing he wasn't going to be the guy that the Cubs had, you know, that naturally as he gets older and the season that he had entering into free agency wasn't the best. So I think that certainly elevated the expectations. And then, you know, year two dealing with bone spurs and trying to pitch through those basically until, you know, he got to the point where he saw that he was hurting the Phillies more than helping. I think that competitiveness, while Phillies fans appreciated it, I think there was, again, some frustration that, you know, while pitching through this injury, you know, it wasn't always helping the team. So I definitely think there's some mixed emotions. I feel pretty confident saying Phillies fans aren't necessarily sad to not see him pitch this next year, but I don't think you can say he didn't try to give his all, you know, when he was out on the mound for the Phillies. But I think it's best that the contract didn't extend beyond 3 years.
Megan, coming back to Chicago, looking at the Cubs from another city that you worked in, having covered the Phillies, and now coming back and looking at the Cubs after you covered them before you went to Philadelphia, well, how do you look at the Cubs franchise where it's at right now and what you feel you're picking up on as you look at Jed Hoyer running the Cubs, taking over for Theo Epstein? What do you think you're seeing initially?
Well, it's interesting. The last year I covered the Cubs was like mid-season of 2014. So it's kind of like right on the precipice of, you know, when they took that next step, and obviously before they won the World Series in 2016. And so coming back, I mean, I see it as kind of an organization that's kind of trying to just retool on the run type of situation, which doesn't always work. And it's certainly challenging because you're trying to find that balance of building the organization, you know, for the future in the next few years while also trying to be competitive in the short term. And that's a very challenging balancing act that I don't think often goes well in the favor of an organization. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what happens in the spring. Hoyer alluded last week to, you know, gauging interest on re-signing certain guys that are approaching their free agency. And so how that plays out, I think, will be a good indicator of, you know, what this team is going to look like in the next 2-3 years. And in terms of the on-field product, how competitive is this team going to be in the short term? So I'm definitely interested in seeing kind of what this roster and the organizational contract situation looks for some of these key pieces going into the regular season.
Megan, and it's great to have you back in town, but it's also great to have a woman on a beat in Chicago in a Major League Baseball that has such a high profile because of the way that Major League Baseball has had to, I think, improve the conditions, working conditions for women on Major League Baseball beats. And this week, they updated their policies on sexual harassment and workplace discrimination in its code of conduct because of what happened with the Jared Porter situation with the Mets and Mickey Callaway with the Angels pitching coach with when he was a manager of the Mets. And throughout baseball, stories that haven't been reported and names that we don't necessarily know. But just in that context, because of what you have, you know, done throughout your career to put yourself in this position, to come back home and have a beat like this, how would you say the state of affairs is as a woman covering Major League Baseball? And at this point in time, are you hopeful that things will improve and conditions will get better?
I mean, it's certainly disappointing to hear things like the Jared Porter situation and the Mickey Callaway situation because, you know, it's I think a lot of women in this industry would feel the same way. It's hard to believe that nobody else saw any indications of, you know, those underlying behaviors. And so, you know, it shouldn't always be on women within the industry to have to, you know, call out these things. You know, the onus should also be on colleagues and, you know, people within these organizations that these things get nipped before it builds into something much worse. And so that means holding people accountable. That might mean holding, you know, friends, coworkers accountable. And so for me, I think until those things start to happen behind the scenes, which would mean, you know, most people never hear about those things happening, but until those things really start consistently, you know, being implemented by people within the industry, that you're still going to have these situations, unfortunately. And, you know, obviously organizations are in a tough spot because, you know, you got to be very thorough in vetting these things, and you have to be willing to take that on, which I'm not sure every organization is willing to do. So I want to be hopeful about the future, but, you know, when you still hear about these things happening, and especially, I mean, these are not like a one-off incident, you know, it's prolonged situations that, you know, span several messages or months, years. So I want to be hopeful that, you know, change will happen and we stop hearing about these things. But I think it's going to take a lot of work behind the scenes. And until and or unless people behind the scenes, especially those in power, are willing to really put in the work on that, then unfortunately I think some of these things are going to keep happening.
It's interesting, Megan, that you talk about colleagues being there for people as well. And just standing up for a colleague, let alone whether they're male or female, is interesting from that perspective. Have there been times during your career where you wish that other people saw what was happening and stood up for you?
I would say yes and no, because in the moment you kind of feel like you just wanted the situation to end, and that it's like after the fact where you're like, oh, I wish I would have said this, or, you know, I wish if, you know, it seemed like so-and-so saw this happen, I wish they would have said something. But it's a really tough place to be because, you know, I think it was alluded to in some of these stories, like you don't want to damage your relationship with, you know, other people within the organization or, you know, who you cover, because you still are going to have to deal with them for the most part. So, you know, downplaying it or, you know, kind of trying to move on from it is often feels like the best case scenario. So it's really tricky. I mean, I think you would hope that if something was, you know, certainly egregious, that if somebody thought that, yeah, that they would be held accountable, you know, to if it was a colleague or, you know, someone else in an organization, if they saw something happen, that they would stand up and, you know, whether publicly in that moment or behind closed doors and, you know, explain why that was wrong or why that approach should not have been taken by said person. So it's a really really tricky balancing act, and I don't think there's one right answer. You just kind of hope that those situations don't happen very often.
Well said. Yeah, and here's hoping that you don't have to face those kind of situations in your new role covering the Cubs for the Chicago Tribune. And welcome back, because here's to more professional experiences in a positive work environment for you and all women covering Major League Baseball. Megan, thank you for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me, you guys.
Megan Montemiro covers the Cubs for the Chicago Tribune, formerly of The Athletic, covered the Phillies. Bruce, we come back. More Cubs talk, because I want to get more into this Brian thing. I want to know what you think about the options. And, of course, we will hear from our listeners, 312-644-6767. I'm David Hogg. Call us. Bruce Levine is here to answer your questions as well. We are on Inside the Clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I think I talked about this a little bit, like 2018, like the first trade rumors that started to pop up, like that really got to me. And then, like, I found myself like, man, is this even fun anymore? Like, why did I start playing this game? You know, because it was fun. You know, obviously there's a lot of other stuff involved. Like, you make a ton of money and there's fame and all this, but it's like, you got to get yourself back to why I started playing. And like, I just remember my first home run, running around the bases. My dad picks me up after around third. I don't even touch home plate, but like, that's the kind of joy that you got to find. And like, I found myself sitting there like, I don't have that joy right now. So it's like, I'm trying all I can to kind of get back to that place. And like, I look back on this year, like, it was really rough for me personally.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse every Saturday morning, 9 to 11, talking baseball 52 weeks a year here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. I'm David Hall with Bruce Levine, and that was the voice of Chris Bryant last month, I believe it was, when he had the Baseball Isn't Fun Anymore interview on Redline Radio, and he took some abuse for that, and I think that he does sometimes, because he's a pretty sincere young man, and he talks about what is on his mind, and I welcome more of Chris Bryant's thoughts and introspection, and I think it's people overreact sometimes to that, Bruce. But Chris Bryant, the subject of some trade rumors this week with the Mets, the Mets and the Cubs swapped center fielders, it seems, this week. And Bruce, I just wondered, before we get to some of the other things about Jake Arrieta, that was the big news about what happened yesterday in terms of supplementing their pitching rotation, but the Cubs did end up with a new center fielder this week, and Elber Almora goes to the Mets and Jake Marisnyk comes to the Cubs. Is that basically a one-for-one trade? The kind of similar guys.
Yeah, you're right, David. They are. Both of them are defensive-oriented players, good defenders, although last year, before he was sent down, you know, it appeared that Albert lost his defensive skills. It was just he wasn't looking like the same player. So a change of venue is pretty good for Albert, and we wish him the best, because he was quite a gentleman and an important cog for the Chicago Cubs. But Marisnyk is a guy that is an outstanding outfielder and a very good center fielder. It gives the Cubs tremendous options in center field now when they have three guys with Happ and certainly with Peterson, but more Marisnyk, who is a Gold Glove caliber defender, to come in late in games and give another right-handed bat. Not much of a hitter, pretty similar to where we saw Albert Almora is offensively, but nonetheless a good ball player and somebody that defensively will help them toward the end of games.
So, Bruce, you can answer this because you are an insider and you do talk to people who understand what the Cubs want to be and why they are making these changes. Because when you look at these changes, as we mentioned with the Jock Peterson and Jake Arrieta package deal, you're getting the same amount, you're spending the same amount of money on them that you weren't willing to spend on Kyle Schwarber and John Lester. With Albert Almora Jr., you kind of let him go, and then you bring in somebody in Marisnyk who is very similar in terms of a skill set. Did the Cubs, or I guess how much is this driven by the Cubs just wanting to be different and almost change for the sake of change? Because they're not getting people that represent clear-cut upgrades. They're getting people that just represent clear-cut difference. differences. And there's not, it just seems like they wanted someone different more than they wanted someone better.
Well, an analogy is a different voice, David. We hear it in all walks of life, all businesses, all professions, teachers. You know, hearing a different voice, having a new start. I think with, you know, for instance, let's just take Arrieta. He's coming off of huge expectations from the Philadelphia fans, looking at $25 million a year for the last 3 years. He did not live up to those expectations. He would have had the same expectations with the Cubs here, but he would have had a little bit more going for him because of the past having done so well here and helping them win a World Series for the first time in 108 seasons. So you always have that going for you. Now he's coming back here and the expectations aren't as high. He's going to make $6 million to $7 million. People are not expecting him to be Jake Arrieta. At least I don't think they're going to expect him to be Jake Arrieta of 2015 and 16. So with that alone, just human nature tells you is going to relax the player. And if he's healthy, that new start, the same thing for somebody like Almora going to New York after being the first number one pick by Epstein and Hoyer back in 2012 and not living up to those expectations. I think those things help fortify that theory about going to another place, hearing another voice, letting another fan base get used to you, getting you to be able to relax as an athlete, just like you would in any other walk of fate of life. So from that perspective, I think it's a good idea.
What percentage of the Jake Arrieta signing, 1 year, $6 million, which I think is less than what Scott Boras initially we heard was going to be the asking price, and there are some suggestions and stories around the league, Bruce, that he took less money to return to Chicago because of all that represented to him and how comfortable he was here, kind of a return to glory. So how much of the percentage was it 50-50, 60-40, baseball versus box office in terms of the Cubs thinking and signing Arrieta?
I think I'm going to side with Hoyer on baseball. I think they're counting on the fact that they needed a solid fourth or fifth starter. They needed five, six, seven starting pitchers. They needed a professional guy that'll go out there and give them a professional effort. I don't think it has anything to do with trying to have a glorified autograph session for the 2016 World Champions. I really don't. I think this is a baseball decision. You know, looking at him now and saying, we still think he's got something left. He can be a fifth starter. He can give us six innings. As Megan pointed out, he averaged 5.5 innings with the Phillies. Not great. He was a 6.3 average with the Cubs. That was a phenomenally high for this era of eras where nobody averages even seven innings any longer. Only a couple every year get close to averaging seven innings per start. So he was among the elite here with the Cubs during his time. He has the highest winning percentage in Cub history at .687 for a pitcher that started more than 100 games for the organization. This is not the same pitcher, and I don't think their expectations are that he will be, but I think they think he's going to give a very good account of himself and be a solid rotation guy. I think you talked to me earlier about, David, the idea, where does he fall? Is he one, two, three? I think after looking at Kyle Hendricks, I think everybody's about the same, don't you?
I think so, which is one big pile of inconsistency. I think that's
scared me for a minute.
yeah. Don't worry. We got Sean Anderson there monitoring the dump button. That's usually not a concern with me. But you're right. Kyle Hendricks is the ace. Then you've got Zach Davies. You've got Alec Mills. You've got Trevor Williams. You've got Adbert Alzolay. You've got Jake Arrieta. And I think that any one of those five could probably emerge as your number two. And any one of those five could probably fall to your number five. Or maybe even get beaten out by somebody else who emerges out of nowhere in your non-roster situations during spring training when anything can happen. And, Bruce, I think the really plugged-in Cubs fan wonders, all right, while you have all these guys competing to be, you know, second best to Kyle Hendricks on your starting rotation, where does Braylon Marquez, the prospect, fit into the mix in terms of the Cubs' thinking? Is he somebody you could see be part of this rotation as early as 2021, sometime during this year?
It's possible. I think he needs a whole year. Look, he was at the other site in in Schaumburg for them this year, and really didn't get to compete, but did get to compete against players above the level he would be at high A or double A. I think another a full year in double A is something that he would probably really benefit from. I don't think they want to rush him. Still a very young pitcher and a high upside. Could he be up in the end, you know, in August and September? Sure, he could, but I don't think they're counting on that. The one thing, before we go to the break and bring in Jerry Nairn, the new coach of the Chicago White Sox, the one thing that you worry about for the Cubs is the similarity in different series of their pitchers. Right-handed, all throw between 87 and 91, 92, you know, the variance isn't quite there. You don't have a left-handed starter. You don't have a power pitching right-hander. So from all of that, I think hitters can get too comfortable in series against pitchers who are similar and all right-handed. And that's something we'll have to watch as the season progresses next season.
That's a great point. Who's the lefty to keep people off balance? Who is the guy in that rotation? Is he here yet? Because as you indicated at the beginning of our conversation at the top of the hour and top of the show, was that Cubs aren't done yet. You wonder if they're going to add anybody else of substance who could maybe contribute in a way and give them something they don't currently have. But we will wait and see, and we'll have more Cubs conversation in the next hour. But as you point out, Bruce, when we come back, we will talk to the newest addition to Tony La Russa's coaching staff. Jerry Nairn joins us next on The Score on Inside the Clubhouse 670, The Score and TheScore.com.